Chapter 11. It was Christmas Eve, and Ermeline was working straight through to midnight. Bronco Grosky had joined her at 10, but tonight she was pulling a double shift. She always did on Christmas Eve, and really didn't mind, since Jamie was being watched by her mother, who would sleep over and be there to help the youngster open its presents on Christmas morning. They did this every year, and Ermeline was glad for it. She was also glad for the huge tips she made in between 10 and midnight on Christmas Eve. Everybody loved her during those hours. Everybody wished her Merry Christmas. Several propositioned her. One offered her $100 to see her tattoo and was brusquely hustled out the front door by Bronco and told to go home and sober up. Nobody heard the single gunshot at 9 a.m. Certainly not anyone inside the noisy, boisterous lounge at the Silver Dome. Besides, the shot had been muffled by 3 inches of paneling and insulation and steel body. At 10 p.m., who would show up out of the blue but Hector Ransom? He slid onto a stool at the bar, ordered a draft beer from Bronco, and received a curious look in return. Bronco knew the face from somewhere, but couldn't quite place it. Besides, the face was half hidden behind a black and gray beard and bleary eyes that seemed to see everything and nothing. The draft was plunked down before him, and Hector two-handed the mug to his mouth. He had the shakes, as he hadn't yet had a drink that day. Johnny's orders. He was to remain sober for this one, no matter what. Hector was wearing his JCPenney fleece parka, which weighed twice its normal weight, thanks to the silver-plated .38 snub nose in one inside pocket and the 10-inch switchblade in the other. He had been the mostly unwilling recipient of the two items, but he had known better than to argue. He remembered what they had told him about cold turkey amputation of his right foot. "Damn," he thought, as he swilled down the beer. "Without a right foot, you can't even drive. How scary was that?" He tapped a quarter sharply on the bar and motioned for a refill. It was going to be a long night. Ermeline felt his presence before she actually saw him. Something about Hector Ransom had given her the creeps ever since the first time she was alone with him when they were 14. She scolded herself for the millionth time. If only she had listened to her feelings back then. Sure, if only. But tonight wasn't a night for if-onlys. Tonight was a night to make an apron full of cash tips. She fastened the smile back on her mouth, ignored the creepy feeling, and went back to waiting on the rear booth. An hour later, she brushed by Bronco, who was going the opposite direction, 4 buds in each hand.
"Guy at the bar. I think you know him."
Ermeline looked. She certainly didn't recognize the guy from the back. All she could see was a rumpled blue parka and the heels of the 2 cowboy boots hooked on the bar stool. The hair was shaggy and long but unwashed. Gross, she thought. But there was something about the guy's size and smell. Could she actually smell him? She decided to take a closer look. She went around the bar, flipped up the entry guard, and worked her way along to the other end, filling mugs, mixing drinks, keeping her head down while sneaking looks in the man's direction. The closer she got, the worse she felt.
"I think you know him," Bronco had said.
Bronco knew his faces, and he rarely forgot one, especially those that had given him trouble in the past. Finally, she was right in front of the man, and he raised his face to look at her.
"Hello, Erm,"
he smiled. She lost it. Damn, it was him, Hector. She felt faint and awash in the old creepy feeling. Still, she pulled herself together and managed to spit out, "What do you want, Hector?"
"What do you want, Hector?
Is that any way to treat our son's father?"
"What do you want, Hector?"
"I want to spend Christmas Day with my son. Divorce papers say I get him Christmas Eve 1 year, Christmas Day the next year. I want my Christmas Day with him."
Ermeline thought about this. The son of a bitch was right. He had been granted holiday visitation. Legally, he could probably have the boy all day if he really pushed it. Her heart sank. Of all times for Hector to show his ugly face. Now what?
"I have no problem with you coming by for an hour on Christmas Day. That would be fine."
He
said, and pulled a battered sheaf of papers from his pocket.
"Read the divorce decree. All day. Not a minute less."
"But you haven't been around in months."
"It's because I've been off earning child support, so I could catch up."
"Catch up?"
"I've got it all right here,"
he smiled, and produced his wallet.
$5,500.
"It's $6,500 now. 3 more months to add on."
"I've got that too. I'm ready to get current and exercise my visitation.
He smiled ear to ear. He was saying exactly what Johnny Bladani had told him to say. He had Johnny's money in his wallet, and Johnny had made him go by the court and get copies of the divorce paperwork. He had come prepared, and it was working.
Come by in the morning around 10. It'll just be Jamie, me, and my mom.
Hector vigorously shook his head.
No. I want to be there when he wakes up. I want him to see what Santa brought him.
Meaning?
I've got my pickup full of toys and presents for my son.
Sure, like what, for instance?
She figured she had him. He couldn't have a clue what 5-year-old boys would want for Christmas. Then he floored her.
We've got boys' superhero costume set, a compound archery set with rubber-tipped arrows, but a real metal target. We've got the oldest standby of all, the Lionel Electric Train, the Polar Express, which cost me over $250, an electric excavation truck. He's sort of like what his old man operates in Louisiana. And there's more.
I got my break in 15. We could go out and talk.
Sure. I'm not going nowhere.
She leaned across the bar and whispered.
Go on out. I don't want to be seen leaving with you. What are you driving?
Ford F-150, Louisiana Plates, East parking lot.
Meet you there. Have it warmed up.
Will do.
And no more drinking, or I don't even sit down to talk.
He finished his beer and left while she was down at the other end of the bar, pouring drinks with both hands. Eileen Creighton's house occupied 5 acres and was set back behind a circular drive that swept in from the highway east of Orbit. It was a large, sprawling Victorian, white, with a green porch surrounding 3 sides. Thaddeus parked the Buick near the entrance to the drive and set off walking. The place was packed. As he got closer, he could see the Christmas tree boughs encircling the front door, the giant wreath, and the stained glass windows on either side of the front door. 2 fireplaces were pouring smoke into the sky, one at either end, and the air smelled of wood smoke, a great smell, and he was happy to be there, happy to be alive, and happy that his law practice was finally getting off the ground, thanks to the case of Ransom versus Harrow filed by his firm. He liked thinking of his practice as a firm. Many lawyers who wrote to him, even from mere partnerships, signed their letters for the firm. He thought it had a nice, substantial ring to it, and he wondered whether sole practitioners might seem overboard if they signed for the firm. That was a Quentin Irwin topic, TBD. He climbed the 3 steps to the porch and stood before the front door, where he gathered himself and drew a deep breath before knocking. He was a little nervous, and he hadn't stopped to ask himself why. But deep down, he knew. There was something about her skin tone and her black hair, the aristocratic nose and bearing, and the great warm smile. There was something about her that, frankly, was a huge turn-on. He hated to admit it, because he wasn't looking for anyone at the moment, because dating took money and he was always low on funds. He still had in mind his ideal, the English major, sometime author, who enjoyed discussing Faulkner and Raymond Carver and Michael Chabon. Those were the people Thaddeus loved to read, and they were where his ideal woman dwelled in thought and in writing. As he rang the bell, he found himself wondering who Eileen Creighton read. He didn't have time for much wondering. Eileen herself answered the door and greeted him with a huge smile. When she saw he was wearing an apron under his blue blazer, she folded her hands down on her knees and laughed with full force.
You are a bartender,
she cried.
You remembered.
Thaddeus spread his blazer so she could read the writing on his apron.
Don't fiddle, heat the griddle, she read. Not exactly bartenderish, she declared.
It's all I could find at the last minute, but sentiment's there. I really will help tend bar if you need. She took him by the arm and walked him to the coat closet.
Not at all. We're catered tonight, including the bar. We'll just get you something to drink and introduce you around. My roommate from college is here. Let's start with her. Come on.
At break time, Ermeline joined Hector outside the Silver Dome. It was just beginning to snow, but it wasn't all that cold. The cloud cover had kept the warm air, and Ermeline took a deep breath when the dome's side door closed behind her and locked. He rolled down the window of the F-150 and waved.
Here's my truck. It's warm in here.
Okay,
she said. She settled into Hector's truck, which, to Ermeline's surprise, was a somewhat recent vintage, maybe a 2010 or even later. Within minutes, she was warming up, and she removed her hands from her coat pockets. She next removed her mittens from her hands and lit a Salem.
"When did you start smoking?"
Hector asked, a surprised look in his eyes.
"I don't smoke. Just sometimes."
"Are you nervous?"
"Seriously, I'm very nervous. I don't much trust people anymore."
"Yeah, I heard someone cut you."
"Really? Who told you that?"
"My sister. I stopped by her house and paid her $1,000 I owed her."
"From last time you left town, I thought that's where you got the money to disappear."
"That's what family's for."
"To help you disappear when the sheriff's after you?"
"Sure, why not? But not to worry."
He pulled the wallet from his coat pocket and counted out 65 $100 bills. He placed them in her hand and closed her fingers around them. She was stunned. Never in her most outrageous dream would she have ever imagined Hector Ransom actually catching up his child support. Never. It made her feel much happier than she had been in a long time. She swiftly went through the mental inventory she kept of the items Jamie needed. New winter coat, new Nikes, new bicycle, the list went on and on. All the things five-year-old boys need to keep up with their buddies. She was at once surprised and very grateful for the money.
"Thank you, Hector," she managed to say, her voice faltering. I'm shocked. I guess you know."
"Yeah, figured you would be. But, I'm not a bad guy. I just don't have any education, and finding work in this economy has been tough. Really tough."
"So, where are you working?"
"Louisiana for BP. We're still collecting oil balls."
"What's that?"
She took a drag on her cigarette and wished she had something to eat. Her stomach was rumbling. This was the time of day she usually had her dinner, a late 10 o'clock dinner after work. Except tonight she was on until midnight. Food would just have to wait.
"Yeah, oil mavericks, they call them. Oil that's broke loose and still clogging up the Gulf."
"Good money, obviously."
"Eh, good enough. At least it lets me get caught up with what I owe in support,"
he lied. Johnny Bladani had provided the money to catch up. It was all part of Johnny's instructions to him.
"So, here's what I need. You let me stay over tonight. I'm not talking about making love, nothing like that. And I'll watch Jamie open presents in the morning. You'll make the usual Christmas morning breakfast. We'll eat, then I'll split. Gone from your life until next time I come back to see him. Maybe another 3 months, that's all right."
She thought about this. Actually, there was no room for him to stay over. Her mom had the couch, and Jamie had a single bed in his room. The only other bed was her own, and there was no way he was getting in bed with her. He seemed to read her mind.
"Tell you what, we go to your place, you get in bed. I come in fully dressed and get on top of the covers. We turn our backs to each other and sleep for 6 hours. Then we get up and I unload Jamie's toys from the truck and put them under the tree. You may make coffee. We'll talk to your mom until Jamie jumps up and comes running. What do you say?"
She was tired. She just wanted to get it over with, the whole visitation thing. And she was still in shock. She had $6,500 in her pocket and would knock down another 200 in tips tonight. That was almost $7,000. That was almost enough for a down payment on an FHA loan in Florida. She knew this. She had wanted for 3 years to get into something, to give Jamie a permanent home to grow up in. Another $3,000, and they would have their dream. Maybe her mom could loan the difference. They could even get a 3-bedroom so her mom could stay with them, at least until Jamie started school. Plus, she could stay over on nights when Ermeline had to work late. More and more that was happening lately. The Silver Dome drinking crowd was expanding as the economy got worse. She sighed.
"But no touching, not even holding hands."
He made the scout sign.
"I promise."
"It won't ever happen again. We're divorced."
"Next time we'll plan it out better. I get him the night before, you get him Christmas Day. Like it says in the papers, we trade off."
"All right. Follow me home when I get off. Midnight."
"This'll be great for Jamie."
"Maybe so."
Hector Ransom smiled to himself. It looked like he would be keeping his foot after all.